to call the meeting to order at 5:00 p.m. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I motion to approve the agenda.
Is there a second? Thank you. Is there a motion to approve the meeting minutes from the February 8th meeting?
Yes, Carmina.
I second.
We'll move on to public comment. At this time, comments from the audience may be made on items not listed on the agenda that are of public interest and within subject matter jurisdiction. The committee has a policy of limiting speakers to not more than 3 minutes. The committee cannot take action on items not listed on the agenda. Public input may be offered on an agenda item when it comes up for, I can't see the rest of the thing. Andrea, can you push it down a little for me? Okay, may be offered on an agenda item when it comes up for discussion and or action. Are there any public comments at this time?
No public comments.
Okay, so we'll move on to old business. Grant payment schedule information is included in the packet. Does anyone have any questions regarding the information provided?
No questions.
Okay. Hearing. Sorry. Okay, can you go back to the agenda for me, Andrea, please? I'm sorry. I don't have my other computer up, so I can't see what's next.
That's okay, it's here. After the grant payment schedule is an update on the progress and final report.
Okay, does anyone have any questions regarding the progress and final reports update?
Well, there's no written report in the packet. We actually just have a couple of progress reports that are pending under review, Jewish Family Service of the Desert, Jocelyn Center, and Alzheimer's Association. So they'll be in the packet next month. And then we have not had any grant requests or LOIs coming in yet, but we are hoping, because we had a successful webinar this past week. And I think we had about 47 participants. We also posted the webinar. It's a video via YouTube on the website. If anyone who missed it cares to listen to it. And we did send out a constant contact blast out yesterday to announce that the grant application is now live. So we are hoping that they will start coming in fast and furious. So anybody has any questions?
Sorry, just a quick update on that. I did check earlier today, and we do have 5 full grant applications that are being worked on.
Oh,
and okay. one mini grant. So we do have a few organizations that have started. Yeah.
You sneaked into Blackbaud and saw it?
I did, yeah.
Well, that's encouraging.
Yes, I'm very happy to hear that. Thank you for the information. Does anyone have any questions or comments for Donna or Alejandro?
Yes.
No, I have a question.
Okay, so we'll start with... Go ahead, Carmen.
Alejandro, I'm curious, who are those 5 participants that you got notice from?
Oh, it doesn't give me that level of information. It just tells me that there's 5 applications currently being worked on.
Oh, okay. Great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Karen, you had a question?
Yeah, we have almost 2,000 people that follow us on Facebook. Is it possible to post the video from our YouTube channel to a Facebook post? It's not like...
I don't see why not. We can ask Will, right, Alejandro?
But I believe Will did do a post
about it. I did see it this morning. So he does have a post about the grants being open with a link to the video.
Okay.
Also on our website as well, President Borja.
Thanks.
Right in the middle.
Yeah, that's what I mentioned.
Okay, I'm on there now. I don't see it, just as an FYI.
On our website?
on our Facebook page. We just get more eyeballs, I think, on there than probably anywhere else. But just putting it out there. Other than that, I'm glad it went really well. 40 plus people is a very big deal. So congratulations.
It is on here. I'm looking at it right now because I'm posting some vaccination clinic events. So we'll posted it 7 hours ago at 9 this morning.
I see it now in big letters. It says grants. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Does anyone else have any questions or comments regarding this information provided? Hearing none, we'll move on to new business, RFQ, RFP process and timeline for a mobile clinic operator. Is there any new information?
Yes. Alejandro, can you introduce the topic, please?
Yes. Based on the feedback and some of the conversations that we've had at previous meetings, we started drafting this RFP to make it a transparent process. Conrado did mention that there are some preliminary conversations happening with Tenet as a regional medical center with their CEO, Michelle Finney, about possibly them assuming the responsibility and operating the medical mobile unit. But we also wanted to make this a transparent effort to see if there are other organizations here locally that might be able to operate the medical mobile unit. So we did start drafting an RFP, and it is attached to the packet. It is a very, very preliminary RFP. We are going to be adding some additional components to that. But at this time, we just want to present it to program committee to kind of get some feedback and possible further guidance on this RFP process.
Can I, Chairwoman Perez, go?
Yes, that's fine.
Alejandro, Conrado, staff. Can I actually ask you to go through this section by section to make sure that we're understanding what you've put down?
Sure, that's no problem. So we have the request for proposals there, as you can see on your screen. It has 7 different sections. The first one is just a summary overview of what we're looking for. And I'm not gonna read all of it, but the 3 main points that we want to find in the summary is that we want to get a provider or get a vendor to license, manage, and operate the medical mobile unit, provide ongoing medical and health education programs and services in medically underserved areas and rural communities of the Coachella Valley. And then lastly, establish partnerships with other healthcare providers to increase the utilization and reach of the medical mobile unit. So the first section is just providing a very high level overview of what we're looking for and a potential vendor to provide these services. Just has contact information, and we continue going on to page number 9. And some of the timelines on here, the dates on here are tentative. We could, push them further along depending on how fast we move in this process. But we are looking at possible having the organizations that are interested submit any proposals by 4 p.m. on Friday, April 1st. So that gives us enough time to review, add, edit, and make any changes to this RFP to ensure that we, get the most accurate information out there to our possible vendors. The second section is the background information. It's just a simple overview of the Desert Healthcare District and Foundation, and also the establishment of the partnership with the Coachella Valley Resource Conservation District. Once again, very high level overview of what, this background information is providing to the possible vendors. And then in page number 10, we start with the outline of the statement of need. And there we have 3 different sections where we want to look at and focus, some of the the qualifications that we would like to see in an operator. So the first one is mobile vehicle capability. Once again, we're looking at somebody who's going to license, manage, and operate the medical mobile unit in compliance with the state of California and federal regulations. Also that the contractor shall provide mobile healthcare and health education services to residents in medically underserved and rural communities within the Desert Healthcare District geographic boundaries. And then the second section is wraparound services to include waste management and medical waste management. So here we're stating that the contractor should provide and manage site support, medical equipment, medical staff, waste management, medical waste management, wraparound services, and management to operate the mobile clinic. And then there it has, you know, six different, you know, points, things from logistical items like tables, chairs, and tents, a power source, policy and procedures for mobile medical health services, the written emergency medical protocol with policies, procedures, and standing orders, as well as appropriate equipment and medications that will be housed in the medical mobile unit. And then medical waste management. Obviously, they're going to be doing any kind of medical procedure that would need to dispose of any hazardous waste. They have to have that, obviously, to operate the mobile unit. And then lastly, the contractor should provide and required wraparound services to include auxiliary power operations and maintenance, signage, and freezer / refrigerator when necessary. So those pretty much the logistical items, you know, needed to operate the mobile unit. And then field operations, right? So we need, you know, so we have upon receipt of notice to proceed, the contractor should mobilize and deploy all approved personnel to provide services in the community. Ensure appropriate IT technology support is available as needed. Obviously, we're going to be working out in rural areas of the community, and if they need to have some kind of Wi-Fi IT infrastructure to ensure that whatever, you know, medical records that they're using at the digital, any kind of computer services that they need to have up and running in order for it to be, you know, compliant with medical record, you know, storage, et cetera. We want to make sure they have that. And then contractors should be prepared to provide extended work schedules, including weekends and holidays, you know, to ensure that we're not doing a traditional 9-to-5 clinic, but we're using this mobile unit to expand upon services on weekends and late evenings, and in some cases, holidays if need be. And then there we highlight that on point number D, 3D, is that the contractors should establish partnerships with other agencies like the Coachella Valley Volunteers in Medicine, the Cal State University San Bernardino Street Medicine Program. And that's to ensure that they do not monopolize the utilization of the medical mobile unit, but that they're actually partnering with other institutions that have shown interest in using the medical mobile unit, but they might not license it themselves. And those are some of the additional details that we need to work around to see exactly how does that work. Is it the main organization that's going to provide the licensing? And how does that work out if they're going to allow, you know, like a VIM or a UCR School of Medicine to utilize it if they're licensing it themselves? So those are still some of the questions we still have to get answers for. So, and then there in reporting, the last point there is community should ensure the mobile clinic's available to community members at least 4 days per week. The last thing we want is to have this mobile unit rolled out and sit in a parking lot 6 days out of the week. So we want to ensure that we maximize the utilization of the medical mobile unit. So they have to have plans either to operate it themselves 4 days a week or in partnership with the previously stated organizations that want to partner to make sure they also have access. So it's being utilized at least 4 days out of the week. And then reporting the registration and then other requirements. And here we have, like I said, it's a draft. So we need some additional guidance from staff members and also legal counsel in regards to licensing and liability insurance, et cetera. And then very simple desired qualifications are that they're a licensed medical provider, They must be located and operate within the Coachella Valley. And then demonstrated experience, current experience working with organizations and community members to implement initiatives and or policies intended to improve access to medical services and health education. And then lastly, on the desired qualifications is the capacity, staffing, and resources to operate a medical mobile unit. So, and then the rest is just submission. Like I said, it's just information, very high level information that has certain dates and times, who they're gonna reach out to if they have any questions, et cetera. And then the last section that I wanna just kind of go over will be the budget. So we are asking them to provide us with the budget of what some of these staffing costs, supplies, et cetera, is gonna cost the organization to operate this medical mobile unit. So, and then the last section, section seven, just shows, like I said, a timeline on page 15, that is tentative, and we could, you know, switch those days around if need be.
Thank you, Alejandro. Does anyone have any questions regarding what Alejandro just explained?
Yes, I have a lot of questions. Carmine and Yvette, maybe you want to go first? Maybe that'll answer some of the questions I have.
You can go ahead, Karen. That's fine.
Carmine. Okay. My first question, we have like the medical plaza that we rent out, which is like a physical location. People can come see it, see the square footage. They can ask us as the leaser to make, might need some help with some verbiage on this, but they can ask us as a leaser to make some construction changes or to pay them a fee for a reimbursement fee for their construction edits. Is that something that is possible in this mobile unit or not possible in this mobile unit?
No, so the mobile unit is being built. It's gonna be a 26 foot long mobile medical unit that's gonna have two examination rooms within the medical unit. It's gonna have two examination tables, standard, just like when you go into any medical room and the doctor's office. Outside of that, whatever services, equipment that they would like to bring on to do whatever they are want to do that day, if they're doing, I don't know, just simple health education, obviously they need to take, you know, those different materials. So depending on what they're going to be utilizing the medical mobile unit for, these organizations have to provide that kind of equipment. So we have, it's pretty much just the basic, you know, two basic medical examination rooms. And if they need additional equipment, then they could provide it themselves.
Yes, you're on mute. Yes, you're on mute.
I was going to suggest maybe that you put the diagram of the unit as part of your package, because I think it would be helpful and an incentive for everybody to understand that, you know, this is a $175,000 mobile unit, and it might get spur interest in seeing how nice it is. And my other question, if I might, is do you think maybe you should extend the deadline maybe to kind of mid-April, so that, because it is, we're only, you know, they're not going to be able, it's going to be a quick proposal, and I don't know that it'd hurt to give them a little bit more time to take a look at this in case they had questions, you know. And we also have approximately $160,000 to help some of the startup costs and stuff, and I know that's not referenced in here, but that, you know, trying to build some interest in submitting a proposal. So I just think that it's a quick turnaround to look at April 1st. If I think maybe a couple more weeks might be, might be better, but I defer to your judgment on that, guys.
My comments with the timeline was, yes, it's very early, but my comments with also like bringing up the medical plazas, when folks come to rent out a space, they get to see what it looks like, the color schemes, right? The height of the thing. I would be curious to hear, maybe not at this meeting, but at the next one, staff's thoughts about waiting until we have the mobile unit, ribbon cutting, things like that. And then like letting people tour the facility to see like, yes, this is gonna work for us. No, that's not gonna work for us. Those are my thoughts on this. Don't need an answer, just my thoughts. I do have a question around the Americans with Disabilities Act compliance. Does this vehicle need to be ADA compliant? And if so, and if it is, we need to include that language somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Yes, it is gonna be ADA compliant. It is gonna have a lift at the back end of it that's gonna provide access directly into one of the medical examination rooms.
What about people who are sight impaired, hearing impaired?
Will there be somebody there that can help with those type of patients, with those patients, like for instance, sign language?
That will be up to the provider themselves to provide, but we could add it on here to, we could add language on here to that ensures that that whoever's gonna be operating does adhere to ADA standards.
That'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
On page 9, I have a question about the statement of needs, 1B. Mostly around the terminology of like medically underserved and rural communities. Do we have a definition of what that is? If someone comes and says, hey, I want to do this in La Quinta, is that, would that qualify or would that not qualify?
We could provide additional language on here, what a medically underserved area looks like, but we're going to be looking at, we're going to use, and actually came up earlier, using policy map to look at what some of those, patient to medical providers ratios are. But we could, just top of our head, we could look at, some communities that are medically underserved. We could think about North Shore. We could think about, certain areas, unincorporated areas within the county where they don't have access to medical services. But we also don't want to limit it, because there could be some homebound seniors in La Quinta that would require some of the services that could be brought to them utilizing the medical mobile unit. So we also don't want to exclude just based on geographic areas. So that's why we put, medically underserved. So, or we could even just take that out and just say areas throughout the Coachella Valley,
Just a question for you all to ponder. I don't have an answer to your question, but I think you're the expert. I believe in you. In same space 2.6, the contractor shall provide all required wrap services to include auxiliary power, operations, maintenance, signage, X, Y, and Z. Can you tell me what you mean by operations and maintenance? Because when we talked about this at the last board meeting, you all gave a sort of a draft budget of some maintenance. Is this something that we want to put on the contractor or is something we're already handling?
That should be on the contractor. They're going to have the mobile unit in their parking lot. They're going to be in charge of doing maintenance on the equipment and everything.
Yeah.
We can reimburse. We haven't gotten to the point where we have specified if we're going to fund part of this or not. As we said,
we, as Alejandro said in the beginning, we want to provide an overview of what direction we're taking with the mobile unit. It's not about how we as the district will operate this mobile unit, because we don't have the capacity or the expertise of operating a clinic or a hospital or a mobile clinic. For that matter, is finding the right partner that can operate, maintain, license this asset, which is an asset for the community, and do it on behalf of the district or in partnership with the district.
So then we should not be taking into consideration the budget that was shared at the last board meeting for this conversation.
That's a conversation to be had. We don't know what the proposals are going to look like. We might get someone who says, I will run it, operate it, and license it if you give me $200 million. And we might have someone who will say, I will take care of everything. We have the budget for it. We will license, manage, operate, and staff this mobile unit. So we will have those two or three options to consider and to say, this is a good option for us.
Okay. My next question is on this field and operations having to do with 3C. And my question is, is that a requirement that the district can put on a contractee? It's not something that we require of other grantees in any other grant, that they open on weekends and holidays. I know it's the word says shall be prepared, but we don't have that language anywhere else. So I'm just curious if it is okay or if we should remove that language.
I think for that, for the—
to answer that question, Alejandro.
Yeah, no, I think it's okay. Aaron, you can put that requirement on the vendor, so to speak. Because I think it'll be part of the licensing process is to, you know, provide the work schedule and such. So certainly it's certainly appropriate for us to put it in there and evaluate it to see what they're going to come back with. I mean, I think overall it's a pretty comprehensive proposal, Alejandra. I think you've done a really good job.
Thank you.
Thank you for answering that. I have another question on D and E. Does this leave room for, like, the only way I could think about this is like subleasing your apartment, right? So the contract is with me, but I sublease it to someone else for a month, for 6 months while I go on vacation or go work somewhere else. Is that a possibility with D and E? If that made any sense, I doubt it
because once a clinic is licensed, it's under one provider's license. So I'm sure that they're going to be whoever applies to operate this clinic is going to be very conservative with how they protect their licensure. So it's like a DAP. DAP doesn't allow Borrego to come in and provide services in their clinic. I don't see how that would happen. I think they can offer a partnership and they will have to arrange how they will do that. They know the logistics of doing something like that.
Thank you. I'm thinking of people like the blood bank, right? So maybe someone like Borrego leases the clinic from us and then they sublease 3 days a week to the blood bank. Is that possible or not possible based on how this is written?
I am not sure.
I think it is possible if they want to partner with somebody that, you know, wants to use it as a blood bank. They're just going to be responsible for making sure that they comply with all of the, you know, appropriate regulations and things and doing it. but they, we can certainly, that's something that, you know, I think is certainly a viable community, you know, service that they could provide. It certainly doesn't preclude them.
That's good to know. Then this leads me to like my real big questions that I had, and part of the reason why I was wondering if Jeff could join us today, which is like third party legal responsibilities. We don't have anything on here about like a code of conduct. So can you operate this while intoxicated? What if you run someone over with the mobile unit? What if someone cuts their finger inside of the mobile unit? I'm wondering what the liabilities are to the district. And I do want to know what some of those liabilities will be to whoever leases this vehicle from us. And well, now with this question, if they can sublease to someone else, what would those liabilities be to someone else?
Okay, I think the answer to that is that fortunately, through the licensing process, those responsibilities and liabilities will be borne by the operator and the organization that licenses this. And the state, you know, they look into all of that. They inspect the vehicle, they make sure that it's safe. There's gonna be, you know, periodic inspections. They're gonna make, there'll be requirements to make sure that they have adequate insurance. All of those things are gonna be on that will be the responsibility of the owner. And I think those are fair questions, Karen, that as we go through this process and ultimately enter into an agreement with the operator, that those kinds of things can be addressed in that agreement. But I'm confident that if we can get somebody that is interested in this and is willing to take on the responsibility for licensing and operating it, that those issues can be addressed and those liability issues can be addressed to safeguard the district's interests.
Thank you. That was like the biggest weight of all of this.
Yeah.
Like thinking that someone's accidents happen all the time outside and inside of help centers, right? So what's not to say something can happen inside or outside of a mobile unit.
That's the advantage of this type of proposal, and it really does transfer those risks and liabilities to the operator.
Is there a way to make that explicit?
Well, that's what I say. I think that this is just the request for proposals. Ultimately, when we grant the contract, if you will, the agreement with the operator, those are the kinds of things that we can address in that agreement. So they will be explicit.
Excellent. Two more questions. The second to last one is around data sharing. Alejandro, I think I didn't write it down what section, but you did say somewhere along here that we are going to be requesting some information. If you can find it, that'd be great.
It's right there on section 4, reporting. To provide a monthly report on activities performed by the mobile clinic.
Excellent, thank you. HIPAA is like a very strict part of healthcare that needs to be followed. I don't know if we can add a line in there or if we need to, maybe we do, maybe we don't. We are not gonna be asking for HIPAA information. I know this was a conversation that Alianza had with us, right? Like there were certain data pieces that they, and we talked about this at the last program committee meeting, there were certain data pieces that they didn't want to share with us based off of people's undocumented status. So just wanted to, as I was reading through this, I was like, one of the things that I thought would be very interesting to have like different types of data sets that are coming in and out of the mobile unit. And then also understanding, right, that there's other pieces of information that we just should not have access to, we can't.
Yeah, definitely. We're gonna bolster that up a little bit more. Donna had provided some really good feedback in regards to some additional items that we should include in this section. So we'll be adding some additional reporting requirements, but we will not be asking for individual health records or any HIPAA you know, sensitive information.
Information.
I think it would just be like, okay, we went to, you know, to Mecca and we saw 17 patients, et cetera, not a individual medical data.
Great. Thank you, Alejandro. Mm-hmm. And then my last question is on page 7 and really anything that has to do with the funding. I may have turned myself around here, but when we are asking for a budget, it's just a budget of what it would take to run the clinic. It is not a request, like a grant request, right? So if they're saying it's going to cost us $500 for mileage, they're also not going to say, Desert Healthcare District, can you grant us those $500? Or I didn't know. That's my question. I can explain it more if you need me to.
No, I think it's just, you know, an overall budget of what it will take. Because like, as Conrado mentioned earlier, they could say it takes $500,000 to run this mobile unit. We could cover 400,000 of it. And we're asking the district for 100,000. Or they could say we could cover it all. So that's what we're looking at. It's not that they're providing us a budget that we're going to fund. It's just, you know, for us to get a ballpark figure of what these different organizations, budgets are to run something like this based on the requirements that we put in the RFP.
Thank you. That explains that question very, very well. That was it. That's my only question. Some thoughts, some concerns. And again, I do think we should push this date a lot further back.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So thank you. Really good feedback. We'll add some of these items to it. I'll add the vehicle diagram, extend the deadline, the ADA standards, look into the medically underserved language. And then also on the reporting section to add HIPAA and other items that we'll discuss internally with staff.
Something else just came up. This is true for federally qualified health centers. When they get licensed, they have a certain deadline to open doors of that particular health center. That might be something worth doing a little bit more research on here that might trigger some of this timeline too. If we are approving people in May, but the unit doesn't get here till July, and in their licensing requirements, they might need to open this 60, 90, 180 days. I don't know what it is for mobile units. That might also help us figure out some of this timeline conversation.
Wonderful. Yes, but the timeline of this RFP is not a timeline to open the clinic. It's a timeline for submission of a proposal, correct?
Yeah, so that's why we're giving us the additional 1 month to do contracting, et cetera. If we have it in July, and then we don't have to release it in July. When we have it, we could release it in August. Until we work out those contracts, you know, all those things that will raise or address, you know, the liability questions you had, President Borja, and other items, obviously, that we want to cover in the contract. So this is just an RFP, and then to come after that will be the formal contract between the two organizations.
Thank you all. I appreciate the patience and the knowledge and the skill it took to put this together. It definitely... see all of that. Appreciate it. That's it on my end.
Okay, thank you. Carmina, do you have any questions?
No, I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Okay, I don't either. So we'll move on to committee member comments. Are there any committee member comments at this time?
No.
Hearing none, I'll adjourn the meeting at 5:41 p.m. and we'll move directly into the foundation meeting.
You don't need me now, do you? Are you done with me now, Karen?
Yes, thank you. Those are
answers. Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
So I will call the meeting to order at 5:41 p.m. Is there an approval of the agenda? Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I motion to approve.
Carmina, second.
Is there a second? Okay. Is there a motion to approve the meeting minutes from February 8, 2020 meeting?
Carmina, yes.
I second.
Okay, thank you. We'll move on to public comments. At this time, comments from the audience may be made on items not listed on the agenda that are of public interest and within subject matter jurisdiction of the district. The committee has a policy of limiting speakers to not more than 3 minutes. The committee cannot take action on items not listed on the agenda. Public input may be offered on an agenda item when it comes up for discussion and or action. Are there any public comments at this moment, Andrea?
No public comments.
Okay, so we'll move on to old business, the grant payment schedule, which is included in the packet. Does anyone have any questions regarding this information? Okay, so we'll move on to Coachella Valley Equity Collaborative. Part A, vaccination, education, and outreach. Is there any new information on this item?
No, just we continue our efforts. You know, our vaccination and testing numbers have decreased dramatically, not specifically to the Coachella Valley Equity Collaborative, but throughout the county and the state itself. You know, so we saw some 36%. There was an article in the Desert Sun today that we saw a 36% decrease in the number of cases here in the Coachella Valley. And that definitely is, you know, being reflected in the number of people that are coming to get vaccinated. But, you know, we continue to do our partnerships with the school districts. You know, we have a couple of events. Sergio has a vaccination clinic today. He's at Peter Pendleton Elementary in Coachella. Tomorrow we have two vaccination clinics at two schools. Will be in Oasis Elementary, and we will also be at Valle del Sol Elementary in Coachella. And then on Thursday, we have another round. One is going to be at Desert Mirage, which is going to service Desert Mirage High School, Toro Canyon Middle School, and Las Palmitas Elementary. They're in Thermal. And then we'll also be at another vaccination clinic at Coral Mountain Elementary. And then this Saturday from 3 to 6 p.m., we have partnered with Borrego Health and the UCR School of Medicine Free Clinic, where they provide free medical services out of the Mecca Library. So we'll be doing some free testing and vaccinations from 3 to 6 p.m. at the Mecca Library on Saturday. So we have established that partnership with Dr. Cheney and her group. So that's going to be a standard clinic that we're going to be doing the second Saturday of each month from 3 to 6 p.m. There out of the Mecca Library. And that's pretty much it. I know there's, in regards to the communications, we're going to be doing a radio blast here. ICUC purchased some airtime on La Poderosa and two other Spanish language radios. So they provided me with a script that I have to read and record, you know, pretty much sharing with, you know, their radio listeners about any upcoming vaccination clinics that we'll have. So I got to practice my radio voice here in the next hour or two and record that. And then I know Will is working in collaboration with Conrado and Dr. Chavinsky and a couple of promotoras to do like a question and answer event where they're going to be, you know, fielding questions from promotoras and community members and just pretty much providing up-to-date information regarding masking, variants, anything that has to do with COVID-19. So that should be announced here in the next couple of days or so. But yeah, we continue to do our work.
Thank you very much for your guys' hard work. Does anybody have any questions for Alejandro? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to number three, advancing the district's role in addressing the healthcare needs of Black communities in the Coachella Valley. Let's see, there's an update. A is one future Coachella Valley scholarship fund.
There's some information in your packet. I'm not sure if this is the same report I put in last month, but it does cover the end of February. Oh, I'm sorry, the scholarship. Sorry, I'm jumping ahead to Borrego. This is an update on the number of scholarships that have been awarded. We actually, back in February 2023, we had the Black and African American Student Scholarship Award Ceremony, which was very nice. Conrado and other staff participated and made some comments, and we got to meet some of the recipients and what college they're going to and what motivated them. So this is the information if you have any, and then there on page 10 is a list of the students who won the awards. So if you have any other questions.
Okay, does anyone have any questions regarding the information provided? Hearing none, yes, we'll move on to part B, access to healthcare, Borrego Health Foundation.
This is the number of, this is through February 2022. On page 12, you can see the number of patient visits that they've had since they began operating in July. And also on page 13 is a recap of the teens that have actually come into the unit. And it's an interesting number, 118 teens, and there's some a lot of interest with the teens. And they are looking to put on for the month of March, pick a theme and have an event where they can get the teens signed up and talk about teen health and things like that. So stay tuned for that event. We'll let you know what's going to happen with that. Any questions?
Does anyone have any questions for Donna regarding the information provided in the packet?
I do want to highlight something related to this report. Okay. And I think it's significant the number of children and adolescents that are coming to the clinic. And the reason why I believe this is important is because you may recall when we started this conversation with the community that we asked the question, why not DAP Health, which is not too far away from the community. And one of the reasons is that pediatric services are not provided by DAP. So we see the number of youth and children that are taking advantage of having this healthcare access point in their community.
Thank you, Conrado. I'm happy to see that population is being served there because there was a need, so they're doing good. Does anyone have any questions?
I just wanted to point out that they, me and Borrego, have a staff member named Porsche who has been pretty successful in developing teen programs and teen clinics in other areas that Borrego serves through their mobile clinic and bricks and mortar clinic. So she's really taken the bull by the horns and really putting this together and getting the teens involved, the teens and children involved, and getting them even more involved to make sure their health is taken care of and they're being proactive about their health. So they've got a fantastic staff member in Porsche.
So just a shout out to her.
All right. Well, thank you to her for helping our teams through this difficult process. Does anyone have any comments? Carmina or Karen, do you have any comments?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Not at this time. Thank you.
Okay, so we'll move on to new business. Number one, RFQ, RFP, process and timeline, South Coast Air Quality Management District, partnerships for air quality community training in rural communities in the Eastern Coachella Valley. The information is in the packet. Does anyone have any questions regarding the information provided in the packet?
Yes. Can you tell us what the difference between a request for qualifications and a request for proposals is?
I think, I'm sorry, Alejandro. Basically, the difference between one and the other is that in a request for proposals, you set a goal, and then the organization comes back with a proposal on how they propose achieving that goal. In a request for qualification, you already have everything spelled out. This is the scope of work. This is what you're going to do. Tell me how qualified you are to perform this work.
And the scope of work doesn't necessarily come from us. It comes from AQMD, right?
That's correct.
Thank you. And then my second question is, if the total funds amount to $54,000, why is this a award amount of $40,000? Where is the rest of that money being used for?
For administrative costs for the district.
Can you share what the percentage is or how that was calculated?
It was pretty much looking at what's the percentage, the hours of the staff that will be participating in the project. It's a very low amount. We don't have a specific formula for that. It was looking at what's the hours we're going to have staff participating in this, providing supervision.
Maybe that's what I misunderstood. The grant, what is our role in this?
So the grant came to the district, and the district will match the same amount that we received, $27,000. I mean, the foundation in this case. So we're using $27,000 from our own money to supplement the other $27,000, and we will provide a grant in the amount of $40,000 to organizations that will be able to complete this work. And the other funding that comes from AQMD to the foundation will be used to cover the staff expenses that we have, time primarily.
So we're just managing it. We're not participating in the activities of the grant.
That is correct.
Can I ask who the manager will be?
Alejandro Espinosa.
Thank you. Those are all my questions. Thank you for answering. Also, I like this setup, by the way. It's like very clear for a visual learner. The more details you give me, the better, right? So I appreciate all of this, the timelines at the end, the subsections. This is, for me personally, very good. That is it.
Okay. Does anyone else have any questions regarding this information? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to committee member comments. Are there any committee member comments at this moment?
Not for me.
Okay. Andrea, I do have a comment on the bottom, it says next scheduled meeting is March 8th. So if we can just change it to April 12th, right? I believe the date is from the next meeting.
Yeah, the next scheduled meeting is today. Here we go. No. I'll make that change. Thank you for pointing that out. I actually missed that. Thank you. The next scheduled date is actually April the 12th.
Okay. So then I'll adjourn the meeting at 5:56. The next scheduled meeting will be on April 12th. Thank you all for your participation and your hard work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Good night.
Dre, I have a question.
Uh-oh. Okay.
On April 12th, we have three, I have three different meetings, including the strategic meeting.
Hold on 1 second, Karen. Just a minute. Let me turn off the recording.